Recorded Books and RB Digital present Network Effect by Martha Wells, narrated by Kevin R. Free. Chapter 1. I've had clients who thought they needed an absurd level of security. And I'm talking absurd even by my standards. And my code was developed by a bond company known for intense xenophobic paranoia, tempered only by desperate greed. I've also had clients who thought they didn't need any security at all, right up until something ate them. That's mostly a metaphor. My uneaten client stat is high. Dr. Arata, who is what her marital partner Oversay calls a terminal optimist, was somewhere in the comfortable middle zone. Dr. Tiago was firmly in the let's investigate the dark cave without that pesky sec unit group. Which was why Arata was pressed against the wall next to the hatch to the open observation deck, with her palms sweating on the stock of a projectile weapon, and Tiago was standing out on said observation deck, trying to reason with a potential target. That's potential, per the earlier conversation where Dr. Arata said, "Oh, sec unit, I wish you wouldn't call people targets." And Tiago had given me the look that usually means it just wants an excuse to kill someone. But then, that was before the potential targets started to brandish their own large projectile weapon collection. Anyway, those are the kind of things I think about while I'm swimming under a raider vessel that's attempting to board our sea research facility. I swam out from under the stern, careful to avoid the propulsion device. I broke the surface quietly, stretched and caught the railing, and pulled myself up. The daylight was bright, the air clear, and I felt exposed. Why couldn't the stupid raiders attack at night? I had drones in the air, giving me camera views of both decks of this stupid boat, so I knew this part of the stern was empty. The superstructure above me was triangular, angled back in a way to make it faster or something. I don't know. I'm a murder bot. I don't give a crap about boats. The upper deck wrapped around the bow where the forward weapon emplacement was. It gave the stupid boat a lot of blind spots, which were someone else's security nightmare. It was more sophisticated than the other boats we'd seen on this survey, with better tech. Of course, that just made it vulnerable. I was also monitoring our outer perimeter and the scattered islands surrounding us, in case this was a distraction and there was a second boarding attempt planned. And, of course, I had a camera on the unfolding shitshow on the observation deck. Tiago stood out there nearly 4 meters from the hatchway, not even wearing his protective gear, very much like a human who didn't trust his sec unit's situation assessment. The apparent leader of the potential targets stood at the edge of the deck, barely 3 meters away, casually pointing a projectile weapon at Tiago. I was more worried about the 6 other potential targets scattered around on the stupid boat's bow deck and the nozzle of the weapon mounted above the bow deck currently trained on the upper level of our facility. Some of the potential targets weren't wearing helmets. There's a thing you can do with these small intel drones, if your client orders you to, or if you don't have a working governor module. When the hostiles are dumb enough to get aggressive without adequate body armor, you can accelerate a drone and send it straight at the hostile's face. Even if you don't hit an eye or ear and go straight through to the brain, you can make a crater in the skull. Doing this would solve the problem and get me back to new episodes of Lineages of the Sun much more quickly, but I knew Arata would make a sad face at me, and Tiago would be pissed off. I would probably have to do it anyway. Unfortunately, potential target leader was wearing a helmet. Tiago is a marital partner of Dr. Mensa's brother, which is why I gave a crap about his opinion. Also, I had no intel yet on how many hostiles were inside the boat where the controls to the large weapon were. Prematurely eliminating the visible targets, excuse me, potential targets, on deck might just tip us out of incipient shitshow into full-on shitshow. There was sort of a chance that Tiago might actually talk our way out of this. He was great at talking to other humans. But I had a drone waiting just inside the hatchway with Arata. Oversay would be upset if I let her marital partner get killed, and I liked Arata. Still managing to sound calm, despite everything, Tiago said, "There's no need for any of this. We're researchers. We're not doing anything to hurt anyone here." Potential target leader said something that our facility system translated through our feed as, "I showed you I'm serious. We'll take what we want, then leave you in peace. Tell the others to come out." "We'll give you supplies, but not people," Tiago said. "If you have nice supplies, I'll leave the people." "You didn't have to shoot anyone." Heat crept into Tiago's voice. "If you needed supplies, we would have given them to you." "Don't worry, the anyone who got shot was me." Tiago, while violating the security protocol everyone agreed to in advance, had walked out to the observation deck to greet the strangers on their stupid boat. I followed and pulled him back from the edge, and so potential target leader shot me instead of him. Got me right in the shoulder. I managed to fall off the observation deck and miss the water intake. Yes, I was pissed off. "Secunit? Secunit, are you there?" Oversay in the facility's command center had shouted at me over the comm interface. "Yes, I'm fine," I'd sent her over the feed. "It's a good thing I don't bleed like a human, because hostile marine fauna was about all this situation needed. I've got everything under fucking control, okay?" "No, it says it's fine," I heard her relaying to the others on our comm. "Well, yes, it's furious." I swung over the railing and dropped to the deck. I'd tuned my pain sensors down, but I could feel the projectile wedged in next to my support framework, and it was annoying. Staying low, I crawled down the steps into the first cabin structure. The human inside was monitoring a primitive scanner system. I jammed it even before I got shot, feeding it artistic static and random reports of anomalous energy signatures to keep it busy. I choked her until she was unconscious, and then broke her arm to give her something else to worry about if she revived too soon. I didn't take her projectile weapon, but I did pause to break a couple of its key components. The room was stuffed with bags and containers and other human crap. There were neat storage racks, but everything was jumbled on the deck. We had seen 11 groups of strange humans in water boats from a distance and had been contacted by two of them. Both had been what Tiago called unusually divergent, and some of the others had called deeply weird. Both groups had taken the same elaborate precautions to show they were approaching in a non-hostile manner and had not displayed any weapons. Both groups had wanted to trade supplies with us. Arata and the others had wanted to just give them what they needed, but Tiago had asked them to trade their stories of why they were here on this planet. So, okay, maybe Tiago had reason to suppose this group would also be non-hostile. But the earlier groups had given me a chance to develop a profile of local non-hostile approaches, interactions, and this group hadn't fit. Nobody fucking listens to me. Potential target leader and their friends aboard Stupid Boat were also dressed better than the other humans we'd encountered, in clothing that looked newer, if not cleaner. There was no planetary feed, Stupid Planet, but Stupid Boat had its own rudimentary feed that was heavy with games and pornography, but light on anything that might be helpful for a security assessment, like who these people were and what they wanted. Even the individual humans' feed signatures only contained info about sexual availability and gender presentation, which I didn't give a damn about. I slipped through into a grimy metal corridor. Then a human stepped out of the next doorway. I disarmed them and slammed their head into the floor. The door to the next compartment was closed, but one of my drones had landed on the roof earlier, flattened itself to a window, and got me some good scan and vid intel. That was kind of important, because this was the compartment with the control station for the large boat-busting projectile weapon that was currently pointed at our facility. According to the drone's video, one small human sat in the weapon station, their attention on a primitive camera-based targeting screen. Three large humans, all armed, sat around casually on battered station chairs, though the other stations had missing or badly jury-rigged or outdated equipment. They were chatting, watching Tiago and potential target leader on the screen, la la la, just another day at work. The compartment was a bulbous structure set to the right of the bow and reinforced with metal to protect and support the large weapon. The six hostiles near the bow, casually pointing projectile weapons at the facility's observation deck, were too far away to hear as long as I didn't overdo it. So I snapped the lock and didn't slam the door as I went through. I hit target one at the weapon station with an energy pulse from my left arm, throat punch to target two as the others came to their feet, pivot and smash kneecap of target three, slap target four's weapon aside and break collarbone. I'd already had facility sis prepare a translation for me, the only sentence I figured I'd need. I said, "Make a noise and everybody dies." Target one slumped unconscious over the weapon control station, wound steaming in the damp air. The other three stayed on the deck, whimpering and gurgling. One of the hostiles outside had glanced around but didn't change position. Tiago, who was unexpectedly good at stalling, had avoided the question of whether the other researchers were going to come out on the observation deck so potential target leader could decide if he wanted to abduct them or not. Tiago was now listing all our supplies and pretending to stumble over Facility Sis's translation advice. I knew he was pretending. He was a language expert, among other things. My drone view showed me that potential target leader enjoyed watching Tiago sweat, and that maybe Tiago had noticed and was playing it up a little. He was pretty smart. "Okay, okay. I admit that it was a little upsetting that Tiago didn't trust me." He and Mensa had had a conversation about me, back on Preservation Station when Arata was planning this survey. Transcript. Tiago: "I know I'm in the minority here, but I have serious reservations." Mensa: "Arata is in charge of this survey, and she wants SecUnit. And frankly, if it isn't the one providing security, I'll withdraw my permission for Amina to go." Amina is one of Mensa's children, and yes, she is on our facility right now. No pressure. Tiago: "You trust it that much?" Mensa: "With my life, literally. I know what it will do to protect her, and you and the rest of the team. Of course, it has its faults. In fact, it's probably listening to us right now. Are you listening, SecUnit?" Me on the feed: "What? No." I'd missed the rest. I'd thought it was better to shut down my tap on the room's comm access and get out of there. Target 2 whispered something which Facility Sis rendered as, "What are you?" I said, "I'm a shut up or get your head smashed." So that was two sentences I'd needed. I had to get out there because target leader had started to walk toward Tiago, and avoiding a hostage situation was important to my risk assessment module's projected schedule of events leading to a successful resolution. In company terms, that's a PSELSR, which is a terrible anagram. I don't mean anagram, I mean the other thing. Tiago backed away, saying, "You don't want to do this. You really don't want to do this." Yeah, well, it was a little too late for them to run away. I stepped to the outside hatch and told my drones to get into position. Two of the hostiles had helmets and body armor, and one had a helmet, but the face shield had been removed. I hit the hatch release and gave the order. At the last second, I changed the drone's instructions from head or face kill hits to disabling wound hits and exposed patches on arms and hands, even though it was the hostile's own stupid, stupid fault for attacking us. Thinking of Arata's sad face made me too uncomfortable. The stupid hatch, I hate this boat, was slow, and all six targets had turned toward me by the time it opened. My drone struck just as I dove out onto the deck. I hit one target with an energy burst from my right arm, kneecapped the second, two dropped from drone strikes, and the last one went down flailing, hand closing convulsively on his weapon's trigger, and shooting me right in the chest. For fuck's sake. By that time, target leader had Tiago's arm, weapon pointed at Tiago's head. I sacrificed six more drones to turn the weapons scattered around me into useless heaps of metal, then shoved to my feet. I walked up the boarding ramp onto our observation deck. I said, "Let him go." I didn't really feel like negotiating. I have a module on it, somewhere in my archive. It was never much help. Target leader's eyes had a lot of white showing, and he was exhibiting multiple signs of stress. So was Tiago. A drone view showed me what I looked like. Water dripping from my clothes, my jacket with the Preservation Survey logo and shirt showing projectile weapon holes, stained with fluid and a little blood. I circled them as if heading for the hatch. Target leader dragged Tiago around to stay facing me, then yelled, "Stop, or I'll kill him!" He was right. I'd been trying to make him move, setting up a shot. He had stopped with the observatory bubble behind him. Not a good angle for me. "You can still get out of this," Tiago gasped. "Just let us go. You can take me as a hostage." "Oh, right, that'll help." I said, "No hostages."
"What is that thing?"
Target leader demanded.
"What are you? You're a bot?"
Tiago said, "It's a security unit, a bot-human construct." Target leader didn't seem to believe him.
"Why does it look like a person?"
I said, "I ask myself that sometimes." Over the comm loudspeaker, Dr. Ratti said, "It is a person!" In the background, I heard Oversay whisper, "Ratti, get off the comm." While that was going on, I did a quick search of my archived video and pulled an episode of Valorous Defenders. It's not a bad show, but this is a terrible episode where the characters are attacked by evil sec units. That's like the opposite of an oxymoron, since in the media there's no such thing as a non-evil sec unit. Is there a word for the opposite of an oxymoron? I grabbed the 3-minute sequence where the sec units swarm the base and slaughter the helpless refugees. I uploaded it to Stupid Boat's porn feed and set it to play on an endless loop. I'm fast, so I'd finished by the time target leader shook Tiago and said, "Order it to back off!" Tiago made a noise suspiciously like a derisive snort.
"I wish I could. It doesn't listen to me."
"I listen to you plenty, Tiago."
"Who does it?"
Target leader wisely gave up on that tack.
"Listen, whoever controls this thing, I'm taking this one on my ship."
"I've destroyed your engine," I said. I really should have done that. Well, too late now. Glaring with fury, target leader jerked Tiago, and Tiago stumbled and leaned away from him, and I saw the whole blossom in target leader's upper arm in the scant few centimeters of clothing and skin exposed between the joints of the badly fitting armor. I lunged forward and grabbed Tiago, slung him aside, then ripped the projectile weapon away from target leader. I knocked him lightly in the stomach and chest with the stock, and he dropped to the deck. Arata stepped out of the hatch, the projectile weapon sensibly pointed down, even though my scan showed she had already engaged the safety. She said, "Are you all right, Tiago? Sec unit?" I said earlier that I was trying to set up a shot. I didn't say whose. Arata had taken a course in weapons use after the whole thing with Grey Chris. I guess having a bunch of murderers chasing you around a planet so they can suppress your research by murdering you would tend to make you more cautious, even if you are a terminal optimist. On the feed, I said, "Dr. Tiago, Dr. Arata, get inside." I grabbed target leader and tossed him onto the deck of his boat, where the other targets were crawling around, trying to get to their hatch. My scan picked up a power surge in the boat's weapon system. That's what happens when you don't have time to clear your hostile vehicle. I said over the comm, "Oversay, now would be good." The thing Oversay and the others had been doing while all this was going on was preparing our facility for launch. Under my boots, the deck rumbled and vibrated, and our outer supports heaved out of the water, sending waves crashing into the boat as we lifted up. I don't think the raiders had realized the facility was mobile. The force of displaced water as our drive kicked in shoved the boat sideways, and the raiders lost their targeting lock. Our outer supports folded in, and we lifted further above the surface. The comm loudspeaker broadcast a siren and a translated warning about minimum safe distance, and I guess the raiders believed it because their engines revved frantically. I recalled my drones, and they shot down toward us to stream in through the hatch. I walked in after them and let the hatch close behind me as the launch protocols started. Chapter 2. I told myself it wasn't as much of a shit ending to my first time as survey security consultant while not pretending to be a human and or faking the existence of a human supervisor as it could have been. Everybody was alive. They had all their sampling and scans done. Our original schedule actually had us leaving in 6 planetary days, but since we had finished early, Arata had moved that up to 3 planetary days. That's why most of the facility had already been prepped for launch. But we'd been lucky, and I hate luck. Standing in the access corridor, I settled my drones, tasking 4 to stay with me, and sending the others to take up various positions around the facility and go dormant. Then I checked the feed for alerts. The team members who weren't busy piloting the facility up through the atmosphere were yelling at each other on the comm. Arata came down the corridor. She didn't have her weapon anymore, and my safety protocol check showed she'd unloaded and secured it back in the locker. "Sec unit, you need to get to medical." I checked the feed again. Still no alerts.
"What happened in medical?"
"You happened. You got shot."
"Oh, right. That."
Arata was gesturing at me, so I followed her down the corridor to the main ramp. I poked through the hole in my jacket and shirt and upped my pain sensors a little. The projectiles were still in there. Sometimes they pop out on their own. Medical was at the top of the ramp, a small compartment on the same level as the crew lounge area and galley. The quarters, labs, and storage were on the 2 levels below, and the control deck was above. Rati was there waiting for us, standing beside the med system.
"Are you all right?" he demanded. "You better lie down."
I didn't want to bother with it.
"No, I'm fine. Just give me the extractor."
"No, no, you were in the water. You need decontam and an antibiotic screen. When the system is prepped, you lie down."
He pointed emphatically at the narrow platform and pulled one of the emergency kits down from the rack.
"Tiago has some scrapes on his neck," he told us, "but otherwise, he's fine."
Rati went out with the kit. The yelling on the comm had calmed down, but I could hear tense voices from the rec room. Preservation-controlled facilities like this don't have sex systems recording everything and cameras everywhere because privacy, blah, 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 but I could eavesdrop through the comm and my drones. If I wanted to. Which I didn't. Not right now. Arata said, Rati's right, Sec Unit. You should let the system make sure the wounds aren't contaminated. She hesitated. Did I? She took a sharp breath. I just stood there because I didn't understand the question yet. She added, Was there any other way? She didn't finish again, but this time I knew what she was asking. No. If you'd waited any longer, I would have had to try to use a drone. He'll probably survive if the others give him medical attention. She really hadn't wanted to shoot anybody, and it told me she had to force herself to learn how to use the weapon. I hadn't particularly wanted her to learn, either. Humans have a bad tendency to use weapons unnecessarily and indiscriminately. Of the many times I had been shot, a depressingly large percentage of hits had come from clients who were trying to help me. Another significant percentage came from clients who had just wanted to shoot something when I happened to be standing there. Arata rubbed her eyes, and her mouth pulled in at one side. Are you trying to make me feel better? No, I actually wasn't. I lie to humans a lot, but not to Arata, not about this. I wouldn't try to make you feel better. You know what I'm like. She made a snorting noise, an involuntary expression of amusement. I do know what you're like. Her expression had turned all melty and sentimental. No hugging, I warned her. It was in our contract. Do you need emotional support? Do you want me to call someone? I'm fine. She smiled. On the feed, the med system signaled it was ready. Now you make sure you're fine, too. She stepped out of the compartment and set the privacy filter on the doorway. I stripped off my clothes and dropped them in the decontam bin and got onto the platform. It would run a check for contaminants and pop the projectiles out of my shoulder and chest. The process only took 3 minutes, just long enough to finish the scene of Lineages of the Sun, I'd had to pause when Tiago had decided to get me shot. The med system tried to cycle into the therapy and post-treatment options, and I stopped it and climbed off the platform. The feed told me we had made orbit and were in the process of rendezvous with our base ship. My clothes now smelled like decontam fluid, but they were dry and clean. I got dressed and opened the privacy shield. Tiago stood in the corridor. Oh, joy. He looked angry and upset, which I could tell, even though I was looking just to the right of his head. He said, Did you kill those people? I'd been angry enough to tear them all into tiny little pieces. The company who had owned me had protocols for these situations that would have required kill shots, at least for the armed hostiles out on the deck. Plus, I'd already been shot once, and the hostiles had been clear about their intent to kill and or abduct my clients. But the company didn't own me anymore, and the only human here I was answerable to was Arata, and only in limited ways determined by a contract that Pinlee had negotiated for me. But the whole point of hacking my governor module was that no one got to tell me to kill a bunch of humans if I didn't feel like it. Or even if I did feel like it. I said, I've reported to my contracted supervisor. I know, I could have said no, I didn't kill anybody. I could have said that even sec units under company protocol use minimum force necessary because the company hates paying survivor damage bonds, and also because sec units are not rabid murderers unless humans specifically order them to be. I could have said that. I had risked his life not using kill shots on the armed targets because I knew Arata didn't want me to. He pressed his lips together. I could ask her. I said, you should definitely do that. He glared at me, and the brown skin on his cheeks showed pronounced signs of a rise in temperature, indicating anger, embarrassment, and possibly other emotions. I was pretty sure he was just pissed off, though. Then he hesitated and said, "Look, I didn't mean to get you shot. I'm sorry." "If you had meant to get me shot, Tiago, we would be having a different conversation." Because I was still mad, I said, "The security protocol all survey members agreed to is available on the facility feed." His face did the things humans do when they're trying not to show how annoyed they are. Mission accomplished. He said, "I made a mistake, but I had no reason to assume those people were hostile." I had reason. I could have thrown together a quick excerpt of my threat assessment report of the approaching boat and why it had been 72% likely to attack. I could have pointed out that they had shot me first, when for all they knew I was just another unarmed human. But I didn't have to answer to him. He didn't like me, I didn't like him, and that was fine. It was absolutely fine. I walked away down the corridor. Help me.file, excerpt 1. File detached from main narrative. Since I'd decided to stay, temporarily, on Preservation Station, Dr. Mensah had asked me to go places with her 7 times. 6 of those times were just relatively short, boring meetings on ships in orbit or in dock. The 7th was when she had asked me to go down to the local planet's surface with her. I don't like planets, but she lured me there by explaining that it was for an art festival, conference, religious observation that would include a lot of live performances. After checking to find out the definition of a lot of was 87+, I agreed to go. Some of the live performances were demonstrations or seminars I wasn't interested in, but I managed to fit in 32 plays and musicals while Mensah was at meetings or doing things with her family members. I used drones to record the performances that were overlapping or scheduled against each other. They were all being recorded for the local planetary entertainment feed, and the popular ones would be reconfigured as video productions, but I wanted to see all the versions. One evening, a play was interrupted when Mensah tapped my feed and asked me to please come get her. The request was so abrupt and out of character, I replied with the code phrase we had come up with in case she was being held against her will. She said she was just tired. That was even more out of character. I mean, I could see she got tired. She just hated to admit it. I left a drone to record the rest of the play and slipped out of the theater. It was night, and the crowd in the street was beginning to thin out, but the big open pavilion across the plaza where the party was being held was still bright and noisy. If you had to be in a crowd of humans, the crowds at this festival weren't bad, since they were the distracted kind where all the humans and augmented humans are talking to each other or on comm or feed or hurrying to get places. The downside was a lot of humans were waving sticks with lighted objects or spark-emitting toys or tossing colored powders that popped and emitted light. I have no idea. But whatever, with all that going on, nobody noticed me. Plus, it was preservation, and there were no scanning drones, no armed human security, just some on-call human medics with bot assistants and rangers who mainly enforced environmental regulations and yelled at humans and augmented humans to get out of the way of the ground vehicles. In the pavilion, I located Mensah near the edge of the crowd, talking to Tiago and Farai, who was one of her marital partners. I stopped next to Mensah, and she grabbed my hand. "Right. It's usually a good idea to warn bot human constructs who call themselves Murderbot before making grabby hands, except during a security incident when you would expect, need, the human you're trying to extract from lethal circumstances to grab you and hold on. And this read as the latter. like Mensa needed me to save her. So I didn't react except to shift closer to her. Tiago was saying, "I don't know why you can't just talk to us." I heard him clearly, since I was looping my ambient audio to lower the level of the music from blaring down to a pleasant background soundtrack level. The glance Tiago threw at me was annoyed, like I had interrupted their conversation. "Hey, she called me. I have a job here. I get paid in hard currency cards and everything."
"I told you why," Mensa said, and she sounded normal, calm and firm.
Except that was also how she sounded when humans were trying to kill us. So, I had the whole pavilion covered by my drones, and weapons scan was negative. Weapons weren't even permitted on the planet, except in designated wilderness areas where hostile fauna was a problem. Voices were loud, but my filters showed they were still well within the range of happy, intoxicated, interested, emotional tones. But Mensa's grip on my hand told me how tense her arm muscles were. Situation assessment, I have no idea. Farai said, "Tiago, no. She asks for space. You need to give that to her." She smiled at me politely. I never know how to react to that. She leaned into Mensa to kiss her and said, "We'll see you at the house." Mensa nodded and turned, and I let her tow me out of the pavilion. We made it outside to the pedestrian plaza, and I asked her, "Do you need a medic?" I thought she might be sick. If I was a human, and I'd had to be in the pavilion with all those other humans for the past 2.5 hours, I'd be sick.
"No," she told me, still sounding calm and normal. "I'm just tired."
I sent a feed request to the ground vehicle, which on preservation was called a go-kart for some reason, some stupid reason, to meet us at the nearest transportation area. The plaza and streets were lit with little floating balloon lights, and the dirt and temporary paving painted with elaborate designs and light-up paint. Fortunately, it wasn't the marker paint that broadcasts on the feed, which would have been a nightmare. As we walked through the crowd, people recognized Mensa and smiled and waved. Mensa smiled and waved back, but didn't let go of my hand. On the fringe near the transport area, an intoxicated human wandered toward us with a handful of glitter dust, but veered off when I made deliberate eye contact. Our vehicle was waiting for us, and I handed her in and climbed into the other seat. I told it to head for the family camp house, which had been erected in a habitation area on the outskirts of the festival site. The vehicle had a limited bot driver, which would take humans all over the campground and festival site, but knew not to go into the designated no-vehicle sections. It hummed out of the court and into the dark, along the path that led through high grass and scrub trees. Mensa sighed and opened the window. The breeze was still warm and smelled like vegetation, and the guide lights along the way were low enough not to obscure the starfield. All the humans and augmented humans staying here for the festival made it a heavily populated area, but we were traveling through the section reserved for humans who actually wanted to sleep. The temporary housing, pop-up shelters of all shapes and sizes, camping vehicles, tents and collapsible structures that looked more like art installations, were all mostly dark and quiet. The camp area for humans who had to be loud was on the far side of the grounds with a sound baffle field to deflect the music and crowd noise. She said,
"Thank you. I'm sorry I interrupted your evening."
I recalled my drones, except for the one that was recording the play, and the detachment I had designated to keep tabs on the family still at the party. Another detachment was at the camp house, maintaining a perimeter and keeping watch on the 2 adults and 7 children who had gone back earlier. I wasn't sure how to react. Mensa wasn't acting like I had rescued her from certain death,
But she wasn't acting like we were heading back to the habitat after a boring but successful day collecting samples, either. I said, "I recorded the plays. Do you want to see them?" She perked up. "I never get to see the performances at this thing. Did you get the one? Oh, what was it called? The New Historical by Glaw and Jimin?" The difference between calm and normal and actual normal was measurable enough that I could have made a chart. I just said, "Yes, it's pretty good." Something was bothering her, and it wasn't just that her family was clearly as weirded out by me as I was by them. They had assumed I would stay in the camp house, which, no. Mensa had told them I didn't need any help or supervision and could find my own way around. Quote, "If it can infiltrate high-security corporate installations while people are shooting at it, it can certainly handle a domestic festival." It wasn't that her family was phobic about the scary rogue sec units the entertainment media and the news feeds were so fond of, or that they didn't like bots. They were free bots wandering around on preservation, though they had guardians who were technically supposed to keep track of them. It was just me, the sec unit, they didn't like. That didn't apply to the seven kids. I was illicitly trading downloads via the feed with three of them. I think if I had been a normal bot, or even like a normal sec unit, just off inventory, naive and not knowing anything about how to get along in the human world or whatever, like the way humans would write it for the media, basically, it would have been okay. But I wasn't like that. I was me, Murderbot. So instead of Mensa having a pet bot like poor Mickey, or a sad bot human construct that needed someone to help it, she had me. I told this to Dr. Bharadwaj later, because we talked about a lot of things while she was doing research about bot-human relations for her documentary. After thinking about it, she said,
"I wish I thought you were wrong."
Farai was a possible exception. Up on the station, when Mensa had first introduced me to her family, she'd had a conversation with me. Or a conversation at me, you could say. Transcript. Farai. "You know we're grateful for how you returned her to us." I did know, I guess. What do humans say in this situation? A quick archive search came up with some variation on, "Okay, and even I knew that wasn't going to cut it. Just a heads up, when a murderbot stands there looking to the left of your head to avoid eye contact, it's probably not thinking about killing you. It's probably frantically trying to come up with a reply to whatever you just said to it. She added, "I wanted to ask you what your relationship to her is." In the Corporation Rim, Mensa was my owner. On Preservation, she was my guardian. That's like an owner, but preservation law requires they be nice to you. But Mensa and Pin Lee were trying to get my status listed as refugee, working as employee security consultant. But I knew Farai knew all that, and I knew she was asking for an answer that was closer to objective reality. And wow, I did not have that answer. I said, "I'm her sec unit." Yes, that's still in the buffer. She lifted her brows. "And that means?" Backed into yet another conversational corner, I fell back on honesty. "I don't know. I wish I knew." She smiled. "Thank you." And that was that. Mensa's family were also weirded out by the idea that I would be providing security and were afraid I would be, I don't know, scaring legitimate visitors and killing people, I guess. And granted, while I have been a key factor in certain clusterfucks of gigantic proportions and my risk assessment module has serious issues, my threat assessment record is pretty great, like 93%.
Most of the negative points come from that time I didn't know that Wilkin and Girth were hired killers until Wilkin tried to shoot Donna Benna in the head. But that was an outlier. Mensa's family also thought they didn't need security, which, maybe before Greycris, that had been true. But as it was, during the festival, I only had to deal with 5 incursions, 4 by out-system newsfeed journalists with recording drones. I took control of the drones, I can always use a few more, and notified the local rangers who drove off the human journalists. The 5th incursion was the one that got me in trouble with Amina, Mensa's oldest offspring. Since the festival had started, I had been taking note of a potential hostile that Amina had been associating with. Evidence was mounting up, and my threat assessment was nearing critical. Things like, 1. He had informed her that his age was comparable to hers, which was just below the local standard for legal adult, but my physical scan and public record search indicated that he was approximately 12 preservation standard calendar years older. 2. He never approached her when any family members or verified friends were with her. 3. He stared at her secondary sexual characteristics when her attention was elsewhere. 4. He encouraged her to take intoxicants that he wasn't ingesting himself. 5. Her parental and other related humans all assumed she was with her friends when she was seeing him, and her friends all assumed she was with family, and she hadn't told either group about him. 6. I just had a bad feeling about the little shit. You might think the obvious thing to do was to notify Mensa, or Farai, or Tano, the 3rd marital partner. I didn't. If there was one thing I understood, it was the difference between proprietary and non-proprietary data. So on the night when potential target invited Amina to come back to his semi-isolated camp house with him to meet some friends, I decided to come along. He led her into the darkened house, and she stumbled on a low table. She giggled, and he laughed. Sounding way more intoxicated than he actually was, he said, "Wait, I got it," and tapped the house's feed to turn on the lights. And I was standing in the middle of the room. He screamed. Yes, it was hilarious. Amina clapped a hand over her mouth, startled, then recognized me. She said, "What the hell? What are you doing here?" Potential target gasped. "What? Who?" Amina was furious. "That's my second mother's friend," she said through gritted teeth. "And her security person." "What?" He was confused. Then the word security penetrated. He stepped away from her. I guess you'd better go. Amina looked at him and then glared at me, then turned and stamped out the door and down the steps to the path. I followed her, and he backed away as I passed him. "Yeah, you better." On the dirt path, lit by the low floating guide lights, I caught up with her. Not so much intentionally, but my legs were longer and she was putting more energy into stamping her feet than gaining distance. She said, "How did you know where I was? What were you doing, hiding under the porch?" She thought I wouldn't get the domestic animal reference. I said, "Wow, that was rude. Especially considering that I'm your second mother's," I made ironic quote marks, "friend. Is that how you talk to your bot servants?" My drone cam showed her expression turned startled, and then a combination of sulky and guilty. "No, I don't have bot servants. I didn't know. I never heard you talk." "You didn't ask. Had I not been talking?" I had been talking to the kids on the feed and to Mensa. Maybe with the rest of the family it had been easier to pretend to be a robot again. I added, "No one else approached that house. He lied about meeting other humans there." She stamped along in silence for 12.5 seconds.
Look, I'm sorry, but I'm not some kind of idiot. And I don't fuck around. If he'd done anything I didn't like, I was going to leave. And if he wouldn't let me leave, I have the feed. I can call for help whenever I want.
She was scornful and way overconfident.
I wasn't going to let him hurt me.
I said, if I thought he was going to hurt you, I'd be disposing of his body. I don't fuck around either. She stopped and stared up at me. I stopped but kept my gaze on the path ahead. I said, Mensa is a planetary leader of a minor political entity that has managed to get the angry attention of major corporates. Her situation has changed. Your situation has changed. You need to grow up and deal with it. She took a breath to say something, stopped, then shook her head.
He wasn't a corporate spy. He was just someone...
Someone you don't know, who showed up out of nowhere at a massive public festival attended by half the continent and whatever off-world humans happened to be wandering through. I knew he wasn't a corporate spy. See above, disposing of bodies. But she sure didn't. She was quiet for 16 seconds.
Are you going to tell my parents about this?
Is that what she was worried about? I was insulted and exasperated. I don't know. I guess you'll find out. She stamped away.
So, in retrospect, I could see that hadn't gone so well.
Our vehicle rumbled through the dark, up the low hill to the camp house, which was a pop-up two-story structure with broad covered balconies off both levels. It had been placed near a couple of large trees with frilly leaves that curved over the roof. It had been built by Mensa's grandfather, while her grandmothers and other assorted family members had been working on the original planetary survey and terraforming. The colonists who hadn't been living in orbit on their ship had all stayed in temporary structures at that point that were moved seasonally to avoid destructive weather patterns in the parts of the planet that had been habitable at that time. There were other pop-ups, large and small, planted all over the hills around us, the nearest 27 meters away. Lights were on inside the house, and one light floated above the beacon spot for the vehicles. I would have worried about the lack of lighting if I hadn't had 37 drones on patrol in the immediate area. Drones had picked up previously identified humans and augmented humans returning to the other houses or passing through the area, and I'd conducted safety checks on unidentified humans encountered for the first time. I was cataloging power signatures on some small mobility devices used by non-augmented humans for medical reasons. I hadn't seen these anywhere in the corporation rim, though maybe that was because I hadn't spent much time hanging out on planets with human populations not exclusively engaged in corporate slave labor. The entertainment media showed planets that weren't all corporate slave labor. I had just never been on one. The drones had also tracked the five younger kids on a completely illicit expedition to a nearby creek, where they had performed some kind of ritual that involved jumping out at each other from behind bushes and rocks. They returned to the house without being caught by the adult humans or older siblings and were now collapsed in their upstairs bunk room, watching media. The house actually had secure, sealable window and door hatches, which no one used, but at least this made it easy for my patrol drones. As the vehicle settled into its spot, Mensa said,
I'm just going to sit outside for a bit. Why don't you go on back to the festival? There's a few more plays tonight, aren't there?
I try to avoid asking humans if there's anything wrong with them, mostly because I don't care. On the rare occasions where I did care, it would have meant starting a conversation not directly related to security protocol, and that was just a slippery slope waiting to happen for a variety of reasons. But humans asked each other about their current status all the time, so how hard could it be? It was a request for information, that was all. I did a quick search and pulled up a few examples from my media collection. None of the samples seemed like anything I'd ever voluntarily say, so before I could change my mind, I went with, "What's wrong?" She was surprised, then gave me a sideways look.
"Don't you start."
So there was something wrong, and even the other humans had noticed. I said, "I have to know about any potential problems for an accurate threat assessment." She lifted a brow and opened the vehicle door.
"You never mentioned that on our survey contract."
I got out of the vehicle and followed her toward a group of chairs next to the house, scattered around in the grass under the trees. The shadow was deep, so I had to switch to a dark filter to see her. That was because I was half-assing my job. She took a seat.
"If that was you half-assing your job, I don't want to see what you're like when..."
The smile faded, and she trailed off, then added,
"But I suppose I did see you when you were doing your best."
I sat down, too. Sitting down with a human like this would never not feel strange. Her expression wasn't upset, but it wasn't not upset either. But I could tell my smart-ass comment had taken us down an awkward conversational avenue where I hadn't wanted to go. I wished I was Art, who was good at this kind of thing. The thing being getting you to talk about what it wanted you to talk about, but also making you think about what it wanted you to talk about in different ways. I wasn't kidding when I said Art was an asshole. "You didn't answer the question." She settled back in her chair.
"You sound worried."
"I am worried." I could feel my face making the expression, whether I wanted it to or not. She let her breath out.
"It's nothing. I've been having nightmares about being held prisoner on Tranril in Haifa, and, you know."
She made an impatient gesture.
"It's completely normal. It would be odd if I wasn't having nightmares."
I hadn't seen much of the recovery phase of trauma. My job was to get the client to the med system before they died. It took care of all the messy aftermath, including the retrieved client protocol. But in the shows I watched, recovery was featured a lot. There was a trauma recovery program that Bharadwaj had used in the station medical center, and the big hospital in the port city had one too. I wasn't the only one who thought Mensa should go get the trauma treatment. I was probably the only one who knew she hadn't. She hadn't exactly lied. It was more a way of letting the other humans assume she had. But the treatment wasn't like a one-time thing with a med system. It took multiple long visits, and I knew she had never made time for it in her schedule. I said, "Is that why you're afraid to go off station without me?" So there were two positions on whether the preservation planetary leader needed security. The first was the one 99% of the population shared, that she did not unless she went on a formal visit to somewhere like the Corporation Rim. And to a large extent, they were right. The crime stats on Preservation Station and the planet were pitifully low, and usually involved intoxication-related property damage or disturbances and or minor infractions of station cargo handling or planetary environmental regulations. Mensa had never needed on-station or on-planet security before this, except for the young Preservation Council trainee humans who followed her around and kept track of her appointments and handed her things occasionally. And they did not count as security. The other 1% was composed of me, Mensa's survey team, all the humans working in station security, and the members of the Preservation Council who had seen the Grey Chris assassins try to kill her. But that incident had been kept out of the news feeds, so hardly anyone thought Mensa needed a security consultant, let alone a sec unit. But Grey Chris was not doing so hot now due to their hired security service Palisade making an extremely bad decision to punch my ex-owner Bond Company in the operating funds by attacking one of its gunships. The company is paranoid and greedy and cheap, but also ruthless, methodical, and intensely violent when it thinks it's being threatened. Relations between the two corporates had deteriorated since what we call the gunship incident, with Grey Chris assets getting mysteriously destroyed a lot in supposedly random accidents, and its executives and employees getting blown up or found stuffed in containers way too small for intact adult humans, and so on. And once Grey Chris had started to cease to exist, even my threat assessment had dropped drastically, but Mensa had still wanted me to continue to provide security. I thought she was humoring me and taking the opportunity to pay me in hard currency cards, which I would need if, when, I left preservation, and giving me practice in being around humans in a setting where I was not categorized as a tool and or deadly weapon. Yeah, I assumed it was about me, but humans assume everything is about them, too. It's not an uncommon problem, okay? But for a while now, I had been thinking it was about something else. Her mouth twisted a little, and she looked away, over the dark hills and fields toward the lighted windows of the other camp houses and tents. She said, "I suppose it was obvious." I said, "Not obvious. Not to most of the humans, anyway." I had a feeling that Farai and Tano knew, but weren't sure what to do about it. She shrugged a little. "It's hardly surprising that I feel safer with you. It's also easier to be around people who understand what happened, what it's like to be in that situation. That's you and the rest of the survey team." She hesitated. "Farai and Tano understand, but I haven't explained to my brother and sister and Tiago and the others why I can't just rely on them for emotional support about this, as usual." Her face turned grim. "They don't understand what it's like to be under corporate authority." That I got. Humans in the Preservation Alliance didn't have to sign up for contract labor and get shipped off to mines or whatever for 80 to 90% of their lifespans. There was some strange system where they all got their food and shelter and education and medical for free, no matter what job they did. It had something to do with the giant colony ship that had brought them here, and a promise by the original crew to take care of everyone in perpetuity if they would just get on the damn thing and not die in the old colony. It was complicated, and when I watched their historical dramas, I tended to fast forward through the economics parts. Whatever, the humans seemed to like it. But she was right. These humans had no concept of what it was like to live under corporate authority, and they really didn't know what it was like to be the target of a corporate entity that wanted to kill you. I replayed my recording of Mensa talking to Tiago and Farai at the party. Mensa had been abducted from Port Free Commerce at a meeting for the relatives of the murdered survey members. Maybe the noisy party, where the other humans who would normally help her had been distracted, had just started to feel too similar. I said, "You need to get the trauma treatment." Her voice sharpened. "I will. But I have some things to finish first." She turned toward me. "And I want you to go on that survey mission with Arada. They need you, and it's a wonderful opportunity for you." It was too dark for her to see my expression. I'm not sure what it was, but you could probably describe it as skeptical. Rati says that's how I look most of the time. With that confident planetary leader, "I am totally convincing you of this" tone, she added, "And you know Amina and Tiago are going too. I'll feel better if you're there to keep an eye on them." "Uh-huh. What about you?" She took a breath to say she'd be fine. I knew her well enough to know those exact words were about to come out. But then she hesitated. The drone I had watching her face increased magnification, its low-light filter rendering her features in black and white. Her expression was intense and fierce, and she was biting her lower lip.
she said. I hate feeling so weak. I just need to stop. And I need to stop leaning on you. It's not fair to you. We need to be apart so I can stand on my own feet again. I didn't think she was wrong, but I still wasn't used to things that were unfair to me being a major point of consideration for humans. It also sounded vaguely like the breakup part of the romance scenes on the shows I watched, most of which I usually skimmed over. I said, "It's not me, it's you." She huffed a laugh. And then I sort of blackmailed her. Part of my problem now was that Mensah, who was way too honest about this kind of thing, had later told Amina that she had asked me to keep an eye on her, which Amina interpreted in some hormone-related human way I'm not sure I understood. Tiago, who is not an adolescent and has no excuse, interpreted it as Mensah not trusting him to take care of his niece. Amina is on the survey because her education requires an internship in almost getting killed, I guess. Due to our previous interaction, she really didn't want me specifically tasked to watch her. Possibly I had been too emphatic with her about potential target. After spending my entire existence having to gently suggest to humans that they not do things that would probably get them killed, it was nice to be able to tell them in so many words to not be so fucking stupid. But I didn't regret doing it. An attempt by Amina to go around Mensah and appeal to Farai and Tano had failed spectacularly in a three-way comm call that became a four-way when Farai had called Mensah to join in on the discussion. I'm not sure what happened past that point. Even I hadn't wanted to watch it. So that was what had happened before the survey. Now we're here, ready for the next major disaster. Spoiler warning. Chapter 3. We docked with our base ship with no problems, and Arada and the others transferred control to the base ship crew. The facility wasn't wormhole capable and was basically just a big, awkward lab module that could land and take off under its own power. It was only 4 standard preservation day cycles back to preservation via wormhole, and I meant to use the time to finish watching Lineages of the Sun. It was a long-running historical family drama set in an early colony world with 136 characters and almost as many storylines. I'd watched family dramas before, but I'd never spent much time around human families before coming to preservation. Data suggests family dramas bear a less than 10% resemblance to actual human families, which is unsurprising and also a relief, considering all the murders. In the dramas, not Mensah's family. When the company owned me and rented me out for surveys, my security protocol included data mining, which meant monitoring and recording the humans every second for the duration of the contract, which was excruciating in a lot of ways. Pretty much all the ways. All the ways involving sex, bodily fluids, and inane conversations. It would never stop being novel to be around a bunch of humans in a relatively confined space and be able to close a door between me and them and not have to care what they were doing. Which didn't mean the humans left me alone. Rati came to my cabin. I didn't have to let him in, so I did. I know, I was still getting used to the idea of not minding the fact that a human wanted to talk to me. He sat on the folding seat opposite my bunk and said, "Tiago will come around. You'll see. He just doesn't..." Rati was reluctant to finish the sentence, so I did. "Trust me." Rati sighed. "It's all the corporate propaganda about sec units being dangerous. He doesn't know you. He doesn't know what you're really like." This would be annoying if Rati didn't genuinely believe it. He's never seen me kill anyone close up,
and I'd like to keep it that way. And he didn't know why it was so important that Mensa be protected on station. He waved a hand at me, though I hadn't said anything. I know, the more people who knew, the more chance of the news feeds finding out, and there was nothing else we could have done, really. After Rati left, Oversay came. When I told the door to open, she just stuck her head in and said,
"I don't want to interrupt. I just wanted to thank you. This is Arata's first time as a survey lead, and you've been really supportive, and I know that's made a difference and helped her confidence."
I had no idea how to react to that, since I wasn't sure what being supportive entailed. My job wasn't to make the humans obey Arata. That wasn't how preservation worked. Besides, that hadn't been a problem. The survey team was grumbly occasionally, but everybody had done their job to a reasonable level. The chance of a mutiny was so low it was registering as a negative number. I'm not sure the word mutiny could even apply to any situation that might occur with this survey team. Most of them had to be begged to complete the required self-defense certification before we left. And this was what preservation called an academic survey, where the data collected was going into a public database. If the planet had been in the Corporation Rim, it would be open to exploitation, but out here, nobody wanted it for anything. I defaulted to, "Arata contracted with me."
"Yes, and we both know that you're very capable of making it clear when you think someone doesn't know what they're doing."
She smiled at the drone I was using to watch her.
"That's all."
She left, and I replayed the conversation a couple of times. I trusted Arata's judgment to a certain extent. She and Oversay had always been firmly in the least likely to abandon a sec unit to a lonely, horrible fate category, which was always the category I was most interested in. They were my clients. That was all. Like Mensa, like Rati and Pinli and Bharadwaj and Volescu, who had opted to retire from active survey work, which gave him the award for most sensible human. And yes, even Garathan, just clients. And if anyone or anything tried to hurt them, I would rip its intestines out. When we came through the wormhole into preservation space, I was watching episodes of The Rise and Fall of Sanctuary Moon again, since there wasn't time to start anything new before we reached the station. Being interrupted isn't nearly as annoying when I already know the story. I was worried about Mensa, if everything had been okay while I was gone. I wasn't sure exactly what okay would involve, but I was willing to settle for unmurdered. I was just finishing a rewatch of episode 137 when the ship's alarm sounded through the comm and feed. It might just be a navigation anomaly, like another transport in the wrong place. We were in a commonly used approach lane, and preservation tended to be visited by lots of non-corporate transports with no bot pilots who wandered all over the place trying to figure out where the hell they were. Or at least that was how I interpreted the constant litany of complaint from Preservation Station Port Authority that Mensa had involuntary access to. With no bot pilot on our base ship, I couldn't get direct system updates, but I tapped the comm system to let me listen in on the bridge. Transcript. Co-pilot Mihail.
"It came out of nowhere. Nothing on comm."
Specialist Rajpreet.
"That's a docking approach. I'm reading active weapons."
Pilot Roa.
"That's it. Raise the station and tell them."
Mihail again.
"Copy, but there's no responders near us."
Well, shit. I rolled out of the bunk and pinged the team feed and sent to Arata. "Dr. Arata, we're being approached by a potentially hostile vessel. A boarding attempt may be imminent."
"A potentially..." "Oh, no," Arata responded.
"Again?"
Oversay asked. I let them deal with the other team queries coming in as I opened my code-sealed locker. I pulled out the projectile weapon,
checked the load and charge, then woke my dormant drones. They all activated their cameras at once, and I had to take a few seconds to sort and process the multiple inputs. I'd changed out of the survey uniform before we'd entered the wormhole and back into the clothes I liked. Human work boots, pants with lots of pockets, good for storing my small intel drones, t-shirt and soft hooded jacket, all dark colors. Because I didn't like logos, even the Preservation Survey logo, which was just a variation on the planetary seal and not a corporate logo. I had a deflection vest from Station Security Operations designed to provide some protection from inert blades, slow projectiles, fire, acidic gas, low energy pulses, and so on. I hadn't been wearing it because it was A, worthless for the kind of firepower usually deployed against me, and B, it had a logo on it. I know, I need to get over that. I made myself put it on under my jacket. I might need all the help I could get. By this point, the potential hostile had continued to approach. Pilot Roa was now making a general announcement which was pretty much the same thing I'd already told Arata. As I left the cabin, my drones converged on me in a cloud formation. I needed more direct info from the base ship, so I sent one ahead, and it whizzed past me as I started down the corridor toward the access. I had a plan, but it was mostly keep the hostiles off the ship, which is not so much a plan as a statement of hopeful intent. This could be really bad. I know. I'm security. I should already have a plan in place for a boarding action, but I was used to having a human supervisor come up with the plans and... Okay, right. I just hadn't bothered because the chances of an attack while en route to and from the mission site were so slight it wasn't worth taking the time off from viewing media. I'd put all the work into coming up with attack and defense scenarios for the facility while on planet, none of which I got to use during the one actual attack on the facility, but though it was tempting,